Maggie, you're something of a child prodigy. When I looked at your bibliography, it kind of put me to shame, my goodness, as a writer. By entering college, you'd written already 30 novels?
I had, indeed. But don't go calling me a child prodigy, because if it makes you feel any better whatsoever, they were terrible.
Yeah, but you are writing. That's a lot more. That's a lot more. In fact, wasn't it by age 16 that you were already submitting manuscripts?
I was. They say that if you 10,000 hours at anything, you'll achieve mastery. And if that is true, then I should have been very good by the time that I was a teenager, because all I ever did was write. But I will say, I feel like I had quite an advantage over my peers in that even when I was tiny, I knew that I wanted to be a writer. And not only that, I knew exactly what kind of writer I wanted to be. I wanted to be that writer that when you walked through the airport, you saw the big stands that were made out of cardboard and they had fat disposable paperbacks in them with gold, shiny name of the author larger than the author of the book, or the author larger than the title of the book. And that was exactly the kind of writer I wanted to be. I wanted to write those frothy paperbacks that you would read on the airplane. So I always knew I wanted to be a commercial writer, which means that I had quite a leg up. I always had my eyes set right on a very specific goal.
So it was the cover that got you, not necessarily the genre.
It was. Well, I knew that I wanted to tell stories that lots of people cared about. And so that's a very important distinction, because there's a big difference between writing a story just for yourself and writing a story for someone else to share, too. It means that you can still be strange, but you have to find a way to translate it for your audience if you're going to write commercial fiction.
But you're known as a young adult writer, yes? Or have you veered from that?
The books are sold as the young adult genre, but the young adult genre itself is having a bit of an identity crisis anyway. There's been all of these reports going out that says that 55% of all young adult fiction is actually bought by adults. And if I go to my signings, I'll have these huge long lines, and they'll be combined of people who are in their teens and people who are older and families, people reading them all together, and yet they're also assigned in school. So I think technically I write for young adults, but practically I just write for humans.
Yeah, I think we need to shake up the publishers a little bit, because I read The Scorpio Races, very impressed, totally loved it. And I'm not even a person who gets into fantasy so much, but you grabbed me. And as I was reading, too, I thought, young adult, really? Anybody could read this. You know, kind of like Lord of the Rings or something. I think you write in a style and about a topic that is kind of a classic, and maybe that has something to do with how popular your work has been. Anybody could read it.
Well, thanks. I think what really does it is that my novels are about very peculiar things, but word of mouth has been fantastic, and so no one will pick up one of my books and buy it based upon what the back of the book looks like. They look like insanity. I understand this fully. But if you hear someone else that you really trust saying, no, trust me, I read this book and I really love it, then you're going to listen to it. And so I can see it coming through my line. It's friends who have met each other because they recommended my books to each other. Or like I said, my favorite is really when families read my books to each other. There's something peculiarly heartwarming about seeing a husband and wife who have a ritual of reading the Scorpio Races to each other every November. It's very charming.
Mm. You have a new novel, The Dream Thieves. Has that come out yet? Talk to me about that a little bit.
I actually just finished a 4-book series that The Dream Thieves is in. It's called The Raven Cycle, and there's 4 of them. I planned from the beginning for there to be 4, and so it's got a plot that I worked out before I started the entire thing, and so I like to think it holds together. But the last one just came out in April. It's called The Raven King, and that one really takes advantage of the fact that I love Virginia. It's where I was born. I was a Navy brat, but I moved around all over, but I always came back to Virginia. And so this series takes place right where I was born, in the Shenandoah Valley. And it's always been a place that strikes me as having a lot of hidden magic to it. And so in this case, there literally is hidden magic. There's a dead Welsh king that has been buried underneath the mountains, and whoever finds him will get a wish.
Fantastic stuff, though. You've got a wonderful imagination. How do you get started? Where do these ideas come from? And, you know, like I said, I read The Scorpio Races, although after that, I intend to read more of your work. But that's my base of knowledge here. And these water horses, I'm not even going to try to pronounce them. They're incredible creatures. Where do you come up with this stuff?
The Scorpio Races is a really good example of how I come up with all of my novels, actually, that have to be important to me, but it also has to have a grounding in mythology. And I love mythology because it makes things more true. And so for me, this is a perfect combination of something I love, Celtic mythology. These water horses, I didn't invent them. They're a tiny little obscure bit of folklore that is quite sketchy. It just says they come out of the ocean every single November, these horses do, and they run up and down the beach, and they'll savage you and carry you back down into the ocean. And so there's not really a story in there, but there was to me, because when I first read it as a kid, I was riding horses all the time, and the only horse that I could afford was a fresh, off-the-track, thoroughbred racehorse. And she was a terrible horse, but I loved her a lot, and so I could have died riding her all the time. She was always running me into neighbors' fences and into their garages, into long forgotten places. And so this idea of horses that you love really deeply, but were probably going to maim you before you reach puberty, the Scorpio Races, it's very true in that sense.
Yeah, it gets scary. These horses get quite vicious, but you're awed by them at the same time. And you also bring some other talents, some of them combine with your career as a writer, and some seem to stand on their own. When I was looking into your background, you're a portrait artist, you've had a race car for a while, you're a goat keeper, you play bagpipes, you started a Celtic band. I'm getting short of breath here listing all these things that you do. Is it just that you enjoy all these things? Some of them you bring to, for instance, your book trailers, you bring some of your music and your artist talents to that as well. Talk about how you balance all of this.
Well, the biggest thing you should know about me is that I really love life. I really enjoy doing things. Mm-hmm. There's so many things in the world to do. And so, I don't know, a lot of it is that I will find excuses to try out a new thing. And if I make it connected to the books, then it seems like it's worth my time. So if I want to play around with writing a new song, if I say, oh, you know, I'm writing this song for my books, then it gives me that excuse that I need to say, I can't come in and meet you this afternoon because I have to write a song. It's for my job. And so in reality, what I really do is I just do everything that I love. And then I just put, it's for my job right afterwards. And it works out really neatly.
And you also do equestrian art, yes?
I was a full-time equestrian portrait artist before I was a full-time author. So, yes, I do less of it now, but I still do a lot of my art in conjunction for my job.
Yeah, okay. Wow, what a wonderful way to balance things out. I love it. When I was looking at the different topics that you've written about, you've also got, what, 4 thrillers about the Irish Republican Army?
No, those were all that I wrote when I was in my teen years. I got a really good piece of advice when I was a kid that said that you should write the book that you wish you could find on the shelf but can't, and you should write the books that you love to read.
Yeah.
And so at the time, I used to love to read all of my mom's hand-me-down wonderful fantasies that had amazing award stickers on the front of them, and they were excellent, and I loved them. And my father used to give me his hand-me-down thrillers, and they were not excellent, but I loved them anyway. And so through my teen years, I used to try and write both of these. I wrote terrible fantasies, and I wrote terrible thrillers. And so among them were 4 political thrillers about the Irish Republican Army. They were impeccably researched. However, I had not met many people, as I was a very sheltered teen, and I had certainly never been kissed. And so these books had lots of people in them that did not look like any people you would ever imagine. And they also had kissing scenes in them that really read more like instructional manuals.
That's fun. I understand that you combine all of this into you've talked about that a little bit, but you bring the art and the music. Do you play the bagpipes on some of your book trailers?
I do. I played the bagpipes, I believe, on the one for Blue, Lily, Lily, Blue. But I also play multiple other instruments that are a bit kinder to play in polite society. I play the harp and the piano. And I just picked up the cello last year.
So how did you get interested in all that? You must have an Irish background.
I do. My entire family plays Celtic instruments. I've got 2 brothers and 2 sisters, and we all play something different. So we were a makeshift band, and then I used some of my siblings actually for a band in college, just fit into it really naturally. And one of the things that I really enjoy about my books now is that we were talking earlier about commercial fiction and making strange things accessible to the world, is that I've been learning as I become a better writer to find a way to make these really obscure kind of Irish and Celtic mythology and music references actually more accessible to a commercial audience. And so The Scorpio Races was actually the book that taught me that I was allowed to be as strange as I wanted to be, as long as I could bring other people in such a way that they would find it approachable. And so that book is filled with Celtic mythology and music references, and it's because of how I grew up.
And you're coming to Kalamazoo soon. Talk to me about that trip. What do you plan to bring? Is it a reading, a signing? What kind of an event can we expect?
First of all, I think I'm going to be driving out there. It's a 10-hour drive, which I think that's a pretty manageable drive, and you can listen to a good bit of music on that. And a lot of the teens have asked me if I'll be bringing any of my cars with, because they follow my cars online. And I think I'll be driving the one that I raced John Green, the author, in, that he set himself on fire during that race last year. And so I think I'll be bringing
that
one.
Oh, you're going to have to tell me more about that.
And then it should be, I'll probably be talking just about the writing life, and then we'll take questions and do a signing afterwards. And usually topics range all over. We try and make it so that you don't have to have read any of the books, but hopefully you leave hoping that you can pick one up.
Will you be selling several, your last ones, or what will you have with you?
Usually, I think Barnes & Noble will be bringing what they have currently in stock, which should be everything as far as I know.
Or it's probably BookBug, I believe. Aren't they working with you? A bookstore called
BookBug?
Yeah. You're going to have to circle back to that race. You threw something out there about fires and race cars. So talk a little bit more about that.
I did. I'm somewhat known for my fast cars, as I enjoy car racing. And last year, John Green, who you know him, he's an author, he pinged me on Twitter and he asked me if I wanted to race. And, of course, the answer was yes. So they shut down an oval for us in Minnesota, and I drove my car out there, the one that I had just souped up and put a new engine in. And someone loaned John Green a race car, and we went out there, and we raced fantastic. But as I came around the corner, having the time of my life, I realized that John Green was indeed on fire, because he had been driving his car with his foot on the gas and the brake at the same time, which heated up everything having to do with the brake lines. And so he caught on fire. And so luckily he was fine. They put him out. They pulled him out of the car. He decided that he wanted to race some more. He was game for this, which I was very proud of him. And so we began to race again, and he set the car on fire a second time, at which point they said, you're done. It's fine. And so they gave him a trophy, and then all the guys at the track said, you know what, you're really fast, Maggie. Do you want to race us in our cars? We race here all the time. So I raced them, and I won, and it was amazing. And then on the way home, as I was driving my car, which had just had the work done on the engine, as I was driving it through Ohio, my car caught on fire. So it's a story that caused a lot of racing, a lot of cars, and a lot of fire.
Wow. You're full of great stories, whether you tell them or you write them. You're so young still, but I hope that at some point you stop to write a memoir or several, maybe in a series. You have quite some stories to tell. That's just wonderful. And you do some graffiti on your cars as well?
I do, but not just me. So I spray painted this car a long time ago. Well, a long time ago, 2012. It feels like a long time. We're all older now. And I just let readers spray paint it, actually, in front of one of my events in Nashville. I wanted to just have a moment before the election where I encouraged everybody who spray painted the car that to be themselves loudly. And even if other people couldn't understand them from the side of the road and they walked by and saw that the car looked hideous, it was a metaphor, that they could be themselves so loudly that it didn't matter if anyone else understood it or thought it was beautiful. And so they all came out, and right now it's totally spray painted all over. It's a lot, I will say. It's very bright colored.
That's wonderful. For a calmer subject, I assume, maybe not, talk about goat keeping. Do you still keep goats at home?
I do. I'm actually standing by my window now because it's very difficult to get cell reception here in the middle of nowhere unless I'm standing in a place where I can see the cows and the goats. That's how I know I'm in a place with reception.
So you have cattle as
well. Well, our neighbors have cows.
Ah.
My husband actually sold his entire herd of cows to them because he bought them on an impulse 2 years ago. I was on tour. He called me. I said, how are you doing? I'm thinking about you. And he said, I'm thinking about cows. And when I came home, he bought this herd of cows. So it was a short-term thing, though. We still have the goats, and we have 9 of them. They're miniature, silky, fainting goats.
Oh,
they're fantastic. They all know their names. They come when called. They have long hair because they're silky, and they're small because they're miniature, and they're fainting, which means that when they're surprised or shocked, they lock up and they fall over.
Oh my gosh. It sounds like your husband and you, you're a great couple.
We just celebrated our 14th anniversary just 2 days
ago.
Wow.
Well, congratulations.
Well, thanks.
And are your kids into writing or goat keeping or racing or too young?
Well, they're 11 and 12 now. And my eldest, she's an amazing artist and she wants to be a graphic novelist. And I'm sure she's one of those extremely devoted students that I'm sure that she will be able to do whatever she sets her mind to. And so if she says she's going to be a graphic novelist, I have full faith in her. I feel like I've lived this story before. And my son, I always thought, how could you possibly rebel against parents that, you know, drive fast cars and have spray paint on the side of their cars and let you have whatever pets you have? And so he rebels by being extremely responsible. He wears khakis all the time. The only time he ever cried over having to go to school was because they were having Blue Jeans Day. And they said that he said that they were trying to make him into a person that he wasn't. And so that's the way he's rebelling. He is a very upstanding
citizen. The pendulum swings both ways, I suppose. So
the
way to get your children to behave is by a little bit of misbehavior on your own part. That's good to know.
I think so. Although, you know, when I say that out loud, it sounds like terrible advice. So maybe take that with a grain of salt.
Take some time to read. All right, Maggie. Well, looking forward to having you in Kalamazoo. I think the kids here are going to enjoy this immensely. And I would encourage adults to go too. You write for all ages, as we talked. So thank you for talking with us today.
Well, thank you for taking a few minutes to talk with me.